Politics have been filling every inch of our day well before November 2016. Every part of our lives are filled with politics, whether you're sitting down to eat a meal, or navigating some kind of workplace conflict, or dealing with a big family issue. Politics is always there. It's in the air we breathe, the water we drink, and the music we listen to. The Politics of Living is a new show that was created in response to the 2016 election with intentions to elevate women's voices and opinions about political, economic, and cultural issues. It's going to feature an assortment of interviews and commentary, insights about global, local perspectives, sharing a variety of views that are often missed by media. Hello, my name's Denise Kowalczyk, and on today's program, we'll be taking a look at spiritually based direct action, a look at one arts organization's approach to using music to look at immigration, homelessness, and the environment, and how we can embrace the personal and planetary healing energy of music to make a difference in how we occupy the world today. But first, Tavi Fache-Drake sat down with a group of urban millennials who get together regularly to talk about music, arts, food, culture, as a way to share ideas, to learn about each other and the world around them. Recently, they got together and talked about feminism.
Welcome, everybody. You all out there have an opportunity to sit in on something profound about
With friends.
This is where a lot of young people and one older person talk about what's important or just stuff they're interested in or just stuff. Today we're going to talk about National Women's Day.
Feminism is the topic, they say.
Yeah, so today would be something profound about
feminism.
With friends.
So cool, let's just go around first.
My name's Phoenix, Christopher Wayne Kibbido. I'm 25, I'm a man.
D. Cook, I go by the name of Free Huey, 29 years old. I'm actually from Atlanta, Georgia, so come with a different, I guess, point of view.
My name is Carrie Cantrell. I'm 28 years old. I'm a feminine person, but I use different pronouns. I don't really believe in identifying by genders at all, so.
Nice.
What's up with it? This is Jermaine Marquette, here to support.
Yo, this is Drew, Cash Drew. Andrew Philpott is my real name. I'm 24. I love veganism, and I love beats and music.
All right, I'm Tave. I just turned 50 last Thursday. I feel like I'm 25 still.
Antonio Blue, R&B singer of the year right now.
I'm Damon, go by Nomad.
Here to help and get people's opinions and my opinion personally on life.
And how old are you?
19.
Where?
About to be 20.
Oh, where are you all from?
Well, I'm from Vegas.
Los Angeles.
I'm from North Carolina. It's a really small town.
From Atlanta, Georgia.
Kind of Salem, Oregon. Kind of San Francisco. We moved around a bunch.
Portland, Oregon, of course. Representative.
Right. Memphis, Tennessee.
What exactly does feminism mean to you, amongst the ladies in the room?
Right.
So when I was younger, I was in a single parent household, and my mom chose to never get married. So she was the first feminist I ever knew. And I don't know that she'd call herself that, but she was definitely someone that was like a free thinker, and she did what she wanted when she wanted.
I grew up in a home with a mom, an auntie, a grandma, and another auntie.
Young man, I was raised by women. It's nothing that I can be against. Mm-hmm. I saw strong women my whole life. So if you are against it, maybe that's something that you have to look deep down in yourself and figure out.
Yeah. Well, feminism for me, I had all sorts of people I looked up to. My first EDA I ever got was like Ace of Base, and I was a big Xena fan. What Xena would do is feminism.
You mean like the show?
Yeah.
Xena Warrior Princess?
Warrior Princess.
Word.
Yes.
Okay. I used to watch that when I was younger.
Absolutely. It's an epic story about heroes. And so the storyline in Xena is all about Xena and Gabriel and their relationship and dynamic as two women. And most of their interactions are with other strong, powerful women. And for me, that was like the only show I ever saw on TV that like portrayed women in that way. And the storyline was about them. So that's kind of what feminism is for me, is like being like, whatever, we'll deal with you boys later.
That's so funny you say that. So when I was younger, we had this show called Electra Woman and Dyna Girl.
Yeah.
And my sister and I used to play that all the time. And now I'm this self-proclaimed superhero called Bam, Barely Adequate Mother.
It's beautiful.
She just does all this stuff and makes it look easy, but really she can kind of like just barely get it together. Like, black artist.
Man, I think feminism is just like, I'm attracted to it. Do what you do.
Embrace the woman's aspect.
Let us join.
You know, all down for whatever it is feminism wants to bring to the world, you know? Showcase it, because we don't know. We're just men that's just like, I don't want to say nothing out of the lines because I don't know what feminism is. I just want to keep it.
I don't want to offend anyone.
We're all just in here sharing and learning, so like nobody needs to apologize about anything.
Right.
That's cool. Feminism.
Exactly.
No apologies.
In 2017, I don't know what's offensive, so I feel like I could just ask.
We should have that conversation because feminism for me is about equality, and it's about having enough respect for one another to not take each other for granted and being like, yo, what's your side in this right now? You know what I mean?
So
like, I have this thought. Tell me what it is because I genuinely like value your opinion. It's not just assuming that I'll shut it down because I'm a feminist. Or like being a feminist also means, you know, I'm your sis, like family, and it's being safe and secure enough to have these conversations with each other.
Yes.
Sure. Like, it just depends on what type of woman you're dealing with.
The scenario.
You know, it's different women, they portray themselves differently. Like, they all got different mentalities. Some women are tougher.
Their skin are tougher.
Yeah, and exactly. Emotionally and mentally tougher.
Those would be the feminists.
Yeah, where you can fight. Yeah. You can fight with those.
Not all
because
of them.
You can tell them how you're feeling because they know they have that power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything to add, Kastrew?
I'm kind of just listening right now. I don't have much to add right now. I'm just thinking.
Just throw it out there.
Yeah, what's going through your mind?
I don't know. I really am just observing.
My first time, too.
What do you think?
I grew up in a house full of women, so I learned a lot of things from my mom. I learned how to take care of myself in so many ways.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. A lot of things that I know as a man, I learned from women. I know I hear a lot about it takes a man to raise a man and things like that. I'm sure you heard things like that growing up.
In a way, it does when it comes to discipline, because mothers
are intended
all that
to
nurture
soft.
Inside for us to embrace our inner self. So when we see that balance as mother and father in our life as a relationship, know how to balance that within ourselves.
Feminists hate men? Is that like...
That's a good question. I don't. I mean, I'm
asking because I'm
curious. I'm married. I'm a lover of men. I have a couple kids. Feminism to me just means like just being yourself.
Yeah.
I understand what you mean by do feminists like hate men, because I feel like there are like extreme ones that are like, you know, anti-men, and because of things like traumatization, like certain things that are probably
happening
like,
in their lives.
They're like anti-men, you know, and it's like I also like understand. I feel like feminism ultimately the goal is balance.
I just want to say I agree with some of the things he's saying.
My thought was, man, if you like a girl and gay or weird or any type of whatever people might say, like, I'm all like what you like. I think that's dope.
I was in this feminist bookstore, right? Some guy comes walking in. We're like, yeah, how's it going? Like, just three of us there, two students, and then the lady who owns the store. She's like, all right, why do all feminists hate men? And we just like look at each other, and then we look at him, and we're like, we don't hate you. We don't know you. He approached three people inside the bookstore as if it were the world headquarters for every woman everywhere. It was kind of hard to explain to this gentleman, we don't hate you. We believe that we're equal to you.
I feel as a woman, you can do anything. Anything's possible.
What I think is feminist is where it's a man, but like thinking like not just like a woman, but like not putting his masculinity first.
Can a man be a feminist? What do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Absolutely.
I'm still learning. I'll do more research.
We're all learning.
I think in order to be a feminist, you just need to hold that innate belief that women deserve the same amount of space and consideration as men.
Yeah,
So that's one of the things about feminism is just recognizing that. And as long as you can recognize and hold space for that and realize that there's progress to be made, always, I think that's feminism.
There you go.
Gray area between black and white or just gray.
It's not even gray anymore now that she threw some color in there.
Yeah.
<It's yellow.
laughs> Can men be feminist?
Can men be feminist?
Yeah, I feel like I do. Yeah, I definitely think so. I feel like they probably don't have as much of like that literal experience of because they're not being a female, but I still feel like there are men that are out there.
It's also masculine in a way, because if you can own up to feminism, you can just kind of like do what you got to do androgynously.
Neighbors got a court order to chop our tree in our front yard. What I did is I hugged it goodbye, literally.
And that's a man embracing his feminism.
Yeah, that's the emotional side, right?
If you think of it literally, it's like a man, it comes from a woman and a man. So it's like you are both.
Desegregation of spaces. How about that?
That's actually a good idea. That's cool.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm
with that, man. It's the bathroom. Just clean it.
Wipe the seat off and put it back down.
Good point.
Balance out the masculine and the feminine, the yin and yang, and the whole like universe of the world. So then... things can, like, I don't know, heal. go.
Heal!
Heal, yeah.
I look at feminism as loving who you are, loving the gifts that God made and coming together.
Yeah, uniting. Unity. I've been wanting to say the word unity at some point.
That's what's up.
Sometime, you know, sit down and chat and stuff, because I know you probably like the things that I would like.
I feel like all of this stuff and assumptions about what women are going to do, what men are going to do, and this and that can all be solved if people just talk to each other and enjoy talking to each other, first of all. Because the art of conversation is an art for a reason. You know what I mean? Be creative with it and learn how to express yourself, and everybody can be on the same page.
Yeah. Listen up, man. Embrace it, dog. It's feminism.
Would it be fair to say it should be themism? Mm-hmm. If you can be a man and a feminist, a woman and a feminist, both, neither, and a feminist, I mean, really, just would like to be
a person.
So that's like my that's my question to you.
Exactly.
Is it themism?
Yeah. I think feminism is themism, because we can talk about like non-binary gender identities or whatever. It's like what you just said. It's about stepping outside of these roles.
It's your mental state on how you embrace
yourself. It's about stepping outside of these roles that we've been assigned to in society.
Now, it's a role almost sometime when I feel like, just like when I'm out regular, like what you would call regular, walking around, is that like being myself is doing what I love. The arts, you know, dancing, the music, the singing. That's what's like when I'm fully...
Embrace who you are and don't be... trapped or not out of your comfort zone. Just embrace what you are. Unless society puts something in your way for you to adapt to, you shouldn't adapt to it. You should live what you think is right and what you believe in.
True.
Like the whole artist realm is freedom to me, so right on.
That's excellent. Yeah.
Y'all gonna do that? That's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Step into your power and respect each other's power.
Yeah, and
use your power to inspire others.
Right. I'm an R&B singer, but I'm sensitive, and it's like love or lust. That's what they said. The women, they lust for me, but they don't love me. So I gotta go through life lonely.
Like the R&B singer's stigma.
That's really feminist of you to say, Antonio.
With feminism and everything else that comes with that, like there's a lot of barriers that are needing to be broken down in society, and a lot of like structures, systems that have been built up over a long period of time, and I feel like it's getting to like a peaking point, like just even with like the Trump being elected and just like the whole feminist movement and like Black Lives Matter and just everything, I feel like it's coming to a peak, and a lot of these veils are getting pulled back and people are seeing the truth about things, and like people are waking up or should be waking up more.
Feminism is about equality and access and consideration in society. And that includes engagement in relationships and jobs and culture.
And friendship.
Oh, yeah, because that's one of the things that we're doing here is with friends.
Because we are with
friends. Conversation.
Right.
So, opening up the dialogue.
At the end of the day, it's feminism.
Feminism.
And what can you do as a feminism? Everything together.
You coming together.
I-T-U-I.
Learn a lot more about feminism than I thought I knew. Yeah, I'm all for it, man. That's really how I feel about it.
Something profound about feminism with friends.
Tune in next time when we're going to talk about other important things, learn more about ourselves, and develop our friendships.
Yes.
Yeah.
Build a closer bond.
Thanks, Tommy.
With the homies.
Well, that was really fun.
Thanks to Tave and Poor Records for sharing that inspiring and informative look at feminism. I'll be sure to hear the entire discussion with that group on our show page. As we all face what's happening in Washington and our own backyard, it can be a struggle to balance your activism and avoid burnout. Robin Shante, host and producer of Dharma Wheel, recently sat down with Betsy Toll, a writer and workshop facilitator with Living Earth, to talk about spiritual activism and how to avoid burnout by using wise radical action.
This is Robin Shante for International Women's Day, and I'm going to be talking about spiritual activism. Spiritual activism is the coming together of spirituality and activism. It's not about religion. It is not about any form of dogma. It is activism that comes from the heart, not just the head. It's activism that is compassionate, positive, kind, fierce, and transformative. Being a spiritual activist means taking our part in creating change with a spirit of positivity, compassion, love, and a balance of interdependence and self-determination. Nothing could be more inspiring and more rewarding than being the change we want to see in the world, within and without. If activism is not grounded in spirituality, it cannot be sustained in the long run. Another definition of spiritual activism is a transforming force of compassion and action that is born of a fusion of deep spiritual knowledge, courage, love, and passion with wise, radical action in the world. My guest today is Betsy Toll, who's the director of an organization here in town called Living Earth. It's livingearthoregon.org. Betsy, welcome.
Thanks, Robin. It's good to be here.
Well, you're someone I wanted to have on this show because you've been doing a brand of spiritual activism for probably easily over 30 years. And I was wondering if you could talk about how you came to that form of activism in your life.
I guess having grown up during the 60s and having been engaged in protest and action during that time as a teenager, the civil rights movement, the anti-Vietnam War movement, women's movement, activism has been a part of my life since I was very young. But what I eventually began to recognize was that a lot of activism is rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. And this Titanic has been sinking and sagging for a long time. And about 30 years ago, I worked on a project with for Save a Foundation, which is an international public health organization, and Ram Dass is one of the founding board members. And Ram Dass asked me, or I worked with him as the coordinator on a conference on a spirit of service. And we engaged hundreds of people down in Los Angeles is where it was, people who were working on the violence going on in El Salvador at the time and U.S. interventions down in El Salvador and Nicaragua, as well, everything, the whole span of service up to people doing home births or working with AIDS patients or planting trees, the entire range of different kinds of social action and activism. And Ram Dass is very grounding in terms of our consciousness of who we are as deeper than human beings and where that fits in and how if we have an awareness of who we are as something greater than our personality, greater than the time frame we live in, greater than our physical identities and experiences, then we're all a part of the same thing. So our activism has to be really inclusive, even of those we're opposing. And that was a transformative time working on that project with him for me in many ways. Yeah.
So that sort of compassion in action is really another hallmark, I think, of spiritual activism, too.
Yeah. How we bring ourselves to... Joanna Macy has been another really influential teacher and beloved friend for me for a couple of decades. And how we engage and find what is the issue I'm pulled to and what are the responses that are skillful responses that can move the needle without causing more destruction or deeper alienation or deeper division and crisis. It's work.
Well, I know for me personally, I remember I was at a rally during the first Gulf War. Mm-hmm. And I remember standing there chanting and thinking, there has to be more. This cannot be the extent of my activism. And I was so tired
of constantly railing against, always just being against something. And I started thinking about, well, how do we create, how do we articulate a world that we want, that people, we can offer people an alternative and say, this is what we want. And I found that without that internal grounding, without filling up that vessel, there was no there there. I couldn't really speak authentically unless I was coming from a place where I had found that, where I had found peace within myself, and therefore could talk about actual peace in the world.
A really interesting thing happened during right around the time that the United States invaded Iraq back in 2003. And there was a demonstration downtown, and it was not one of the big ones that we had. This was a smaller one after the war had gotten started. And so I wasn't there. My husband was there. And a guy drove by shouting at the protesters, "Peace is death. Peace is death." And, you know, this, there was a lot of fear in the air at the time. People were terrified that, you know, these terrible jihadi people were going to kill all of us. And therefore, we had to go to war. We had to be brave. We had to be courageous and aggressive. And so I think that's probably where that person was coming from. Bill didn't engage the guy because he just drove by. But it made me think a lot about what do we think of as peace. And there is often, it's kind of a flatlining. It's kind of like this, you know, version of quiet pink clouds and harps playing. And that's not a world I want to live in. That's not a world that's interesting to me, and nor do I think it's anything attainable or worth fighting for.
Well, yeah, and that definition I read earlier, it's that fusion of deep spiritual knowledge with wise, radical action in the world. I think when people hear the word spiritual, they automatically associate it with religion, and there are a lot of people out there who retreat within themselves, and they don't want to be bothered with what's going on in the world. They're just, you know, this stereotype of this person that's just off meditating, and they don't want to deal with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what we're talking about.
We're
really talking about a way to not burn out is one
one
way of looking at it.
Really important element. So engaged spirituality is the model that we ground in whatever our personal practices are. Those might be spending time every day in meditation. That's one way. It might be spending time in prayer. It might be spending time digging in your garden mindfully, paying loving, grateful, dirty fingernailed attention to the earth. There are different ways of anchoring in our greater sense of who we are. But how we then engage, that we do exist in relation to each other. We do exist in these bodies and in these larger systems of families, neighborhoods, communities, states, nations, you know, it expands out and out. So how we bring our spiritual understanding and our spiritual tools into play as we engage in everything from the grocery line, you know, standing and waiting for the checker at the grocery, or social action with the city council, or opposing a war, or all of those different things, how that grows out of that deep inner place of contemplative and thoughtful awareness and the practices we have that we sustain that with and that we then apply in the larger field. That is what engaged spirituality is for me.
Well, and I think, you know, ever since the election, people everywhere I go are just shell-shocked.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of people have a lot of energy to do something, but they don't necessarily know where to focus it. And you and I were talking earlier before this interview about you brought up a word, liminal state. Mm-hmm. Could you talk about that? Because I think that really describes where a lot of our listeners are right now.
Yeah, it certainly describes where I am.
Yes, right, myself too.
And I do think that everyone that I'm in touch with, everyone I know and everyone I'm in touch with is experiencing this. So a liminal state is an in-between zone. And it's a state of emotional, psychological, and perhaps spiritual distress that occurs when everything that we know has been shattered. And we don't know yet what lies ahead. So there's this in-between ground, this space of disorientation, confusion, anxiety, nervousness. And the liminal, that zone, if you will, is experienced when you receive, for some people, not everyone, when you receive a terminal diagnosis. Oh my God, I thought I was going to live to see my grandchildren, but I won't live to see next year. What does that look like? It occurs with a divorce for some people. It occurs with the loss of a job or a career that has been deeply important to your identity, and suddenly that's taken away. It occurs with the loss of a home. So it's happening in the culture all the time. It happens to us as individuals, but it happens, you know, in cultural disruption a lot. And when you're seeing the kind of disruption that we're all experiencing, certainly since the election and especially since January 20th, this onslaught of change and disruption and fracturing of what we have understood and what we have our heads around as the ways in which things proceed normally, even the way in which change, fundamental change happens. The rules are all being broken. The rules are all being broken right now. And so this disorientation, frustration, fear, uncertainty, confusion, everyone is struggling with levels of that all the time now.
Well, yeah, and for a lot of people, myself included, I've never experienced anything like this, where every day you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. Every day we're being distracted with lies on top of lies. The media doesn't even know how to deal with it. I think as women, it's really, really important that we remember how to ground. You know, that term, how to ground, mm-hmm. and that we need to be grounded, sounds so cliche. Mm-hmm. But think how difficult it is to do the work that needs to be done without filling yourself in some way.
Grounding happens in the body. It happens in the body. And whether your body is identified with this or that particular gender, it happens in our bodies. And which any meditative technique, any technique of prayer, isn't really about escaping the body. It's about fully inhabiting and being here, here now. Ram Dass's line, be here now with this breath, with this heartbeat, with this cramp in my knee, with this whatever. And that pulls us. We spend a lot of our time, and especially right now and as activists, we're a little bit going crazy about what's going down and what do we do next? What do we do next? What do we next? We're leaping into the future. And where we need to really find the answers to what do I do is right here in this space, in this moment, in this breath, in this body. And as women, our experience
provides us both the cultural conditioning, the history of women's experience, and who we are today, the wonderful unfolding of the potential of femininity, feminism, feminist models, lets us think way, way, way outside the box. But we have to have rituals or practices that bring us right here, right now, so we can see clearly. And that is key.
I think another thing that's really important is creating community and community ritual. Starhawk is a person who's really wonderful at that, using earth energy and bringing together communities. Because as a unit, we can be so much more effective sometimes than we can as individuals.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Joanna Macy, and Joanna is going to be here in August, which is very exciting, for her last visit to Portland, Oregon.
And we'll have an interview right around that time to talk about that.
Yeah. That Joanna's work is very, very earth-centered. And identifying with ourselves as fully conscious, individuated human beings who are actually interconnected parts of a living body. And so we can't really kill this part of the body without damaging every other part of the body. And that's what a lot of us, you know, it would be really nice if we could just say, ooh, those are the bad guys. Let's get rid of those bad guys. But every representation that those bad guys embody is a part of human consciousness. Greed, fear, power. Every one of us has those and exerts those in different levels, at different times, in different ways, sometimes skillfully. Oh, fear can be very reasonable. Oh, wanting to have things that provide a certain stability, that can be very reasonable. But when it goes over the top, it's destructive and dangerous and, you know, wreaks havoc. But recognizing, oh, what they're embodying isn't something alien. It's something that is a part of human consciousness. That's a really vital thing to recognize so we can not demonize those who are doing things that are harmful.
I think that's one of the hardest things that most of us as activists, it's so easy to go to that place of us and them.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think is so powerful about engaged spirituality, engaged spiritual activism, is that you really have to look at, when you get in touch with that heart energy, that's where compassion lives, that's where love lives, that's where we get our courage. And that's the message of this segment of International Women's Day, that we have to take care of ourselves. We have to go within and really feel what compassion is, what love is, and take that courage and make social change. Betsy Toll, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Robin. It's always so good to see you.
And this is Robin Shanti for International Women's Day.
Thanks to Robin and Betsy for that interview. The Oregon Symphony has been stretching its borders in the program content they've been offering, ranging from a performance honoring David Bowie to playing live music or performances during screenings of classic movies. Now comes the groundbreaking Sounds of Home series, which hopes to start up a citywide conversation on issues we face as a community. Anessa Anderson spoke with Scott Showalter, the symphony's president and CEO, recently about the concepts at play and how the idea evolved.
We've long thought at the Oregon Symphony about how it is that we connect to our community and what is the role that the arts play in today's society. So in 1617, the season that we're currently in, we brought different forms of visual art to the stage as a way to reimagine old classics in a 21st century mindset. And we wanted to push the envelope further next season in 2017-18, again, bringing different forms of visual art to the stage in a way that could excite audiences, both new and old, but go one step further. In fact, the entire season is called A New Dimension because we think of taking our programs, both on stage and off, into a new dimension and connecting with the community. The roots of the Sounds of Home series start a couple years ago in conversations with other arts leaders, other nonprofit leaders, volunteer staff, with elected officials, with our greater community, about what our community today cares about. And then we put it through the lens of, among the various issues of, in today's world, what can we as a symphony address? We're not trying to change minds or inform policy. We're saying nothing of the current administration or elected officials. We merely want to give treatment to issues that are important in our world today. And the three that stood out at the time that we began these conversations were immigration, environment, and homelessness. And because we could partner with artists and conceive classic works that touch on these very issues, it made sense for us to think about how it is that we could bring these to the stage.
And I wanted you to talk a little bit about the new mayor, Mayor Ted Wheeler. He's the honorary chair of the Sounds of Home series, which is really exciting. That's one case where you do have a political side to it. Encourage that conversation with the city.
Right. So whatever people's political feelings, our mayor is the head of the city. We consider the series, The Sounds of Home, not to be foremost about immigration, environment, or homelessness, but about how is it that we can make our community stronger. And so we're partnering with nonprofits in the art space and charities outside the art space that deal in each of these areas and inviting a citywide conversation on these topics. So Ted made the natural leader, figurehead for such a citywide conversation. I think people will look at immigration maybe today, especially after political movements in recent weeks, and think, well, the Oregon Symphony is being opportunistic or trying to make a statement. Far from it. This was something that we've been thinking about for some time. And in fact, the way, just to take one of those programs in the Sounds of Home series, the immigration-focused one, as an example, we are doing a play with the orchestra on stage at the same time. This is the second time in orchestral history that a new work, a play, has been acted out on the stage at the same time that the orchestra plays. Now, this is going to be on the subject of immigration. Luis Alfaro, a MacArthur Genius Award-winning playwright, is also being featured by Oregon Shakespeare Festival at Portland Center Stage around the same time, so we have that nice tie-in with our arts partners around a new work that he will be doing for us. We have a new orchestral commission, incidental music, that will be played alongside that. This is on the subject of immigration. Again, nothing to do with the current political atmosphere, or maybe it will touch on that, or people will have that lens into it. But this, you know, these conversations that we had with Luis and others far preceded the presidential elections, for example. And then also on this same program, we've got Kirill Gerstein, who's an immigrant from Russia to Germany and the United States, performing two piano concertos, highly uncommon. Schoenberg, who is and was an immigrant, and then Gershwin, who was a first-generation immigrant. And this is all under the direction of Carlos Kalmar, who is an immigrant. So the idea is that we will see the value of all the contributions that immigrants have made to our home community and to the arts, especially. A good number of our musicians hail from other countries themselves. And so it's a way to highlight some of that good work. And to the extent that that can also spawn ideas beyond the Oregon Symphony and beyond Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, we we hope to be the catalyst for that. So as I've talked, for example, with Andrew Proctor, the head of Literary Arts, there's some authors who are now touching on themes of immigration in new ways. He will love the opportunity to have a platform beyond his known base to be able to say, hey, these are works that are being profiled in the coming months under the guise of this citywide conversation on these themes. And so it gives bigger visibility to all arts and culture communities. And so there's a natural tie-in back to your question with the mayor and our community writ large.
There are three concerts, and I'm looking, you know, you mentioned Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue and right. Schoenberg, and then that'll be in November. And then right. in January of 2018, I can hardly believe I'm saying that, Stravinsky's amazing Rite of Spring. And that is touched in via environment for Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, which is an amazing piece in and of itself. Must have been really interesting for Carlos Calmar to, you know, and whoever all is involved in choosing these pieces, you know, how they're going to interplay into these wider themes that you've organized.
That's right, and we're going to bring the Rite of Spring in a favorite work in a new dimension with this original video art. So this is the different sort of depth, a multimedia that we brought from this season with the Soundsite series into next season as well with Sounds of Home. So with the immigration program, we've got the depth and the new visuals that come with the acting, with the play on stage. In the case of the environment program, we've got video art by Matthew Haber, who's this foremost multimedia designer, has worked MoMA in New York and other premier visual arts institutions. This will be the first time that he's working expressly for a major American symphony orchestra. And so how we conceive and how he works with Stravinsky to make that piece come alive will be touching for the environment. You know, the other pieces, too, were chosen. Bartok's Violin Concerto certainly stands on its own. Alina Vahala, who's this American-born Finnish violinist, will be triumphant, transcendent in her own right. But the Bartok piece wove folk themes, so music from his home environment during a period of growing fascism. There's an interesting interplay there into how we're conceiving of the environment in our home community, even in the broadest sense of environment and rebirth, as is the case in Rite of Spring. But the Haydn piece was, you know, hundreds of years ago commissioned after the opera house in which he performed decimated in a fire. So there was this new commission and at the time of the rebirth of a new opera hall. So if you think about environment most broadly, it's not just the flowers that come up, you know, come March or April. It's the home in which we all live. And how do we conceive of that? And what's the role of arts and culture?
And then finally, the third in the series of Sounds of Home is Joshua Bell. Who doesn't love him, you know? But he has an interesting background, if you could talk a little bit about them.
Yeah, so he's perhaps the world's most famous violinist, and it was 10 years ago when he performed in a D.C. subway tunnel and was thought to be homeless, probably by many, in any case, like the homeless often are, virtually anonymous. Mm-hmm. And that there's a book written that we may be able to have part of you know, the Everybody Reads series, or as part of a summer reading series for kids called The Man with a Violin, or Man with a Violin, and it talks about Josh and kind of what he did outside in this way. We may do a reprise of that in some way here in Portland. In any case, it's fitting to have him on the stage for this program. We've got an original piece by Gabe Kahane, who's this preeminent composer, who's doing a world premiere on the subject of homelessness. And this charismatic black singer from Canada, Misha Brugger-Grossman, is the singer who will be profiled in this piece. And in addition to that piece by Gabe, we've got Hindemith's News of the Day that we're going to give a visual treatment as well. This News of the Day was the Nazis had once proclaimed degenerate art, and thinking about that subject, news of the day and homelessness, how it is that we can think about the news evolving in this social set of issues, I think will be important. And already, transition projects, JOIN, Portland Homeless Family Solutions, Rose Center are involved with us as partners, and that'll be a growing list. We're looking to have partnerships in each of these areas, as and I say, trying to get a broader array of programs going, not just on the stage, which is what we've been talking about largely, but off the stage as well. So we run a couple hundred education and outreach programs around the state every year, and to the extent that our work in schools, libraries, neighborhoods, correctional facilities, retirement homes can be informed by some of these themes around the sounds of home, I think that will be, you know, an important extension of the work that we're
very much so. And also just to make people aware, like transition projects, you know, a lot of people don't know what that is, you know, so it's really important to that educational part of it. Just in right. The information part of it is really, really critical. Speaking of the information, is there going to be any kind of Q&A from the stage after the shows, or
whether it happens? I think that's TBD, but I think we want to continue the conversation, whether it's immediately following concerts or, you know, for stage reasons, has to be set up elsewhere. You know, we want to be able to promote that in a healthy way, but we haven't determined that just yet. I'm excited to see where this will go. There is a movement afoot among orchestras nationwide to figure out, you know, what the role is going forward. Again, absent any political changes of the moment, thinking about the role of the orchestra in today's society. When I think about Mozart in his day or Janis Joplin in hers, the art that was being written and performed was reflective of the world around them at the time. And so we as an institution cannot only perform dead white men music and leave that to be this kind of aging art form. We have to continue to think, okay, well, how are we doing what we're doing as imaginative and reflective of our society today in an apolitical context? We're not trying to, you know, change the mission of our 501c3 at all. But if we are separate from the world around us, then I think we miss an opportunity to connect in a meaningful way to the people who are thinking about those issues. And even if somebody wants to, you know, come to the hall and not think about these things, that's absolutely fine. You can come hear Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. You can come hear Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. You can come hear Josh Bell perform. There's that opportunity in the hall when you come to hear a concert, when you get, don't have to, but you get to turn off your cell phone and you get to reflect on the beauty of our world and the people around us. And if we can do that in thoughtful ways, I think then so much the better.
Thanks to Anessa and Scott for that discussion about Sounds of Home presented by the Oregon Symphony. You can learn more about that series by visiting their website, orsymphony.org. We're going to close out today's program with a little music performed by contributor Deborah Giannini in today's Songbite. In honor of International Women's Day, she sings, "Ain't I a Woman?"
I'm Deborah Giannini, and I'm a teaching artist, and I collect songs. I think of songs as kind of like plane tickets that can take us to different times and places. In honor of International Women's Day, I present a songbite from my song bag today entitled, "Ain't I a Woman?" It's actually the title of a speech by Sojourner Truth, her most famous address, her words from the Women's Rights Convention of 1851 in Akron, Ohio, were set to music in this song by Jack Hardy in 2010. An African-American abolitionist born into slavery in the 18th century, Sojourner Truth worked tirelessly for human rights. This song provides a sketch of her life and her potent message of gender equality. As you will hear from the lyrics, she, in fact, persisted. The songwriter, Jack Hardy, was an instrumental figure in the realm of folk music and humanitarian causes, and he believed in the sacred responsibility to write and sing about history and the issues of the times. He influenced many songwriters through his Monday night New York City apartment songfests. The circles there operated under one rule: fresh songs only. He pressed his guests to bring only songs that had been written in the previous week when showing up for his Monday night music and pasta feeds. The results there were often celebrated over the years. People like Bob Dylan, Lyle Lovett, Suzanne Vega, Tracy Chapman, and many others came to Jack's flat. The one I'm singing for you today is one of the last songs that Jack made before his death. The music lives on, as it always does, to serve our cause. Ain't I a woman, said Sojourner Truth? Ain't I a woman? Ain't I a woman, said Sojourner Truth? Ain't I a woman? I can bear the lash. I bore the lash when none but Jesus would hear me. I bore 13 children, saw most of them sold off into slavery. Ain't I a woman, said Sojourner Truth. Ain't I a woman? Ain't I a woman, said Sojourner Truth. Ain't I a woman? Well, I can eat as much and I can work as hard as any man can if I can get it. I have plowed and planted and gathered in the barn, and look at me, I'm a woman. Ain't I a woman, said Sojourner Truth. Ain't I a woman? Ain't I a woman, said Sojourner Truth. Ain't I a woman? Now if that first woman turned the world upside down, all of us women together can turn this world back right side up, and the men, they just better let us. But that man over there said to hush my mouth. He said Christ was not a woman. I've got only one question for that man. Where did your Christ come from? He came from a woman. He came from a woman. He came from God and a woman. There weren't no man, 'cause man had nothing to do with that. I said, ain't I a woman? Ain't I a woman? Ain't I a woman, said Sojourner Truth. Ain't I a woman? I'm Deborah Giannini for The Politics of Living, bringing you songs with a sense of place for our time.
Well, that's all the time we have for this, The Politics of Living. Thanks so much for listening. My name's Denise Kovalchek. You have a great day.